speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Monday, March the 4th, 2019. Yeah, time is flying quickly. We're already a week into March. We're going to talk about some big news that happened over the weekend. Of course, President Trump had a two-hour speech at CPAC. And then we also had the gloves finally taken off of Michael Jackson's pedophile history. And we've got a documentary that aired, part of it aired last night. Another part of it's going to air tonight. The BBC has, as some people reported, the BBC is BBC Radio is denying that they pulled the Michael Jackson songs off of their playlist. Nevertheless, they did do that in the past with one artist, and they haven't played any Michael Jackson songs. It would be kind of inappropriate as the documentary is airing, I think, because it's very disturbing information that is coming out. But this is not limited to Michael Jackson. We've also got the Jeffrey Epstein trial being refocused on, and the efforts to keep that quiet again. We've got a very popular model in Argentina who was killed a couple of weeks ago, several months after she said, I'm going to expose this pedophile ring here in Argentina. Here's keep this tweet, because I'm telling you, I'm not looking and I'm not upset. I'm going to be very careful. I am not going to commit suicide. And yet she did. And so we're going to take a look at what's going on with this. We're also going to look at the big pharma vaccine panic of 2019. Article after article after article being put into the press. I've talked about these as they've gone from Austin to Houston to the Philippines to Madagascar, a place where the majority of children, it's got a child mortality rate that is seven times that of the United States. Children are dying there from common colds. They're dying from diarrhea. They're dying from having no food, no medical care. And yet they use that to try to panic. USA Today used that to try to panic people into thinking that they're all dying from measles and not being vaccinated. Oh, look, 900 people died. We had, out of 68,000 cases of measles in Madagascar, we had 900 deaths. Well, that is far less than what the typical number of people who die from these other things like pneumonia, diarrhea, malnutrition, lack of medical care, just in general, lack of sanitation. And yet they want to use that to panic the population into vaccines. So now, over the weekend, we had an article on Infowars.com from Don Salazar talking about how they're now stepping up the attack. They are having anti-vaxxers at the center of a pandemic. This kind of fear-mongering is what we see over and over again. And we're going to take a look at the one-year anniversary of the Salisbury-Novichok terror attack. Remember, that was the nerve gas that supposedly made a double agent Russian who was living in had been living in London for many years, that made he and his daughter sick. No. Novichok is a nerve gas. It is far more potent than VX nerve gas that we have used as weapons. It raised a whole host of issues. It's a phony terror attack. And even as that is happening, you know, we get 1 year on, we see how that was used to try to get us into ISIS and expand the war. They went ahead and expanded the war anyway. We got boots on the ground. We have Al-Qaeda's Air Force that was there. And they built a dozen bases, four airfields and so forth, without any concern by the people in Congress who are now jumping up and down and screaming that President Trump can't protect our border. And then something very interesting happened over the weekend. Footage emerged of the U.S. government apparently dropping white phosphorus on the last ISIS stronghold. Now, that would be a terrorist attack if that were the case. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
In a world of deceit, Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Monday, March the 4th, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. We got a lot of news to cover. We've got the reactions of various people. People who should know better, people like Rand Paul, should know better than to be freaked out about President Trump's emergency order to protect the border. It is an emergency. He has spoken in the past about how we need to protect our borders. Why can't we protect our borders? Why are we fighting these foreign wars? You know, we have authority for the president and for the federal government, but it's to be done by the president, its commander-in-chief, to protect our borders. And there is no authority for most of these wars that we've been involved in. And Rand Paul is exactly right about that. But there is authority for this. Where have these people been when, as I pointed out, Barack Obama, without any constitutional authority to provide health care subsidies for people, there was no constitutional authority for that. There was no constitutional authority to force us to buy insurance from private corporations in the way that they want it, even. Right? Talk about socialism. It's already here, folks. It's called Obamacare. If the government can centrally plan your health insurance program and what type of coverage you have to have and then force you at the point of a gun to get it, then we have socialism. We have a centrally controlled economy here. And why hasn't Congress done something about that? Why hasn't President Trump, quite frankly, done something about it? All they had to do was stop the appeal, because not only did the Congress not appropriate any funds for Obamacare, but they sued President Obama on the basis of that. A judge agreed with the Congress and said, no, you don't have the authority to provide these funds. And yet Obama just took the money. He stole it from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac investors. He called it a net asset sweep. Obama appealed that judge's decision, where two of the three branches decided against him, and just continued to do what he wanted to do. Now, President Trump has never done that. As soon as any judge comes in and says, you can't do X, President Trump is, okay, we'll stop, and we'll appeal. Obama did just the opposite. He said, we'll appeal, but we'll keep doing what we want to do. And I don't see anybody even talking about that. And I don't see President Trump's Justice Department, as we've talked about this now for a couple of years here at InfoWars, I don't see President Trump's Justice Department just saying, we're not going to pursue that appeal. That would end the Obamacare subsidies. Ah, that's the problem. That would be unpopular. So you got to roll out something that is Obamacare light. Or you got to roll out DACA, Dreamers light. The Dream Act never passed through Congress. And yet Obama and his Homeland Security Secretary said, well, we're just not going to enforce the U.S. law. We took an oath to the Constitution. We said we'll enforce the law, but we're not going to do that. And that's continued under the Trump administration. And so when President Trump tries to do something right, says, I'm going to overthrow reluctance of the... I mean, it's not even overthrowing Congress. They have allocated a record amount of defense money. So let's defend the country. Let's take it out of the defense budget. I don't think he needs to declare an emergency. That may have some legal implication in terms of being able to expedite the construction. Frankly, I don't think the construction is going to happen unless he builds it with the military. Military can build things pretty quickly. They did in Syria. Nobody funded it. Nobody authorized it. But they built multiple military bases there. They deployed troops. They built four airfields. All of that happened very, very quickly. If President Trump goes the route of civilian contractors and environmental studies and so forth, I mean, that's one thing that the national emergency could help to clear the way of. But if he goes through all of that, eminent domain, if he does all of that, it'll never get done. Even if he has the money, even if he allocates the money, he needs to do it with the military. He needs to use the money that we have to defend this country. So we're going to talk about that coming up. But before we do, real quickly, President Trump spoke, as you know by now, on Saturday, a record 2-hour speech before CPAC. He said, you know, I'm totally off script right now, and this, you know, is how I got elected, by being off script. And if we don't go off script, our country is in big trouble, folks. That's right. You've got to get off script. President Trump has gone off script in the past. The very first day, he got rid of the TPP. Good. Trans-Pacific Partnership was a trade deal that didn't have as much to do with trade as it did with destroying the sovereignty of the United States. He should have done the same thing with NAFTA. Instead, what he did was he came up with NAFTA 2, which in many ways is worse than NAFTA 1, the USMCA agreement. That is NAFTA 2.0, and it's worse than the original in terms of destroying our sovereignty. Also, the Paris Climate Accord, which was never legally ratified. It was signed by Obama. He doesn't have the authority to do that. It's the Senate that gets us into treaties. And he finally did that over the objections of Rex Tillerson and his daughter, Ivanka. And I'm glad that he went off script with that. It's time to go off script with the border. It's time to, I don't think he even needs to bother with the national emergency, but if they want to go that way, Rand Paul and others are wrong to say that the president can't use the Defense Department, that he can't declare an emergency. It quite clearly is an emergency. I'll explain that to you. I've got some news items showing what an emergency it is here. But as he was speaking, the reaction, of course, from CNN was very predictable. They accused him of being a Russian agent, of using the talking points of Putin, at the same time saying that he also sounded like Hitler. Well, they're starting to come around to the idea that there's not much difference between fascists and communists, but it isn't really that good. The CNN national security analyst, Sam Vinograd. Vinograd. Is that a Russian name? Can we trust what this person says? Actually, the person's name, Sam, is actually a woman. I don't know if that stands for Samantha or if she is a transgender, but she said he sounded a lot like Adolf Hitler and said he really looked like Vladimir Putin scripted his speech. Let's play a clip of this from CNN as they spiral down into rating obscurity. Here's CNN.
It makes me sick on a personal level, preserving our heritage, reclaiming our heritage. That sounds a lot like a certain leader that killed members of my family and about 6 million other Jews in the 1940s. But on a national security level, the president talks about preserving our heritage as a catch-all for implementing policies that misallocate resources. He pretends that there are massive flows of illegal immigrants coming over our borders and is spending billions of dollars on a border wall emergency instead of paying attention to real national security threats. He sounds a lot like despotic leaders that have talked about white heritage and white nationalism around the world and is putting resources in the wrong place and pretending that there are foreign people trying to influence our country in a way that just isn't accurate.
Who does that speak to?
It speaks to his base. And it also, by the way, this whole CPAC speech,
because
how many
bases,
parts of President Putin's
Hitler
to-do list was President Trump trying to accomplish today? He denigrated our institutions, the Department of Justice and the U.S. Congress. He spread misinformation and conspiracy theories. He undermined the credibility of several of our institutions.
Can't believe that.
He sowed divisions. He sowed confusion. He was speaking to his base, but he was also saying things that really look like Vladimir Putin scripted his speech. So it helped him perhaps with his base and politically, while at the same time making Russia's job a lot easier. Let me pivot.
Boy, the lies and the projections of that. He denigrated the Department of Justice with his conspiracy theories. No, it was the Department of Justice that was doing the conspiracy theories. And ignoring the fact that Hillary had used campaign funds to create false documents to slander President Trump. The most amazing thing about this is that she's saying, well, this statement makes me sick on a personal level. You talk about preserving your heritage, reclaiming our heritage. That sounds a lot like a certain leader that killed members of my family and 6 million other Jews in the 1940s. Well, now we have from the Democrats reparations rhetoric. That is real hate, racism, civil war. And this individual here, Sam Vinograd, actually is a senior advisor at the Joe Biden Institute. And what she didn't tell you was that Joe Biden used those same talking points in 2011. So he took it from Biden, not from Putin. Welcome back on this Monday, March the 4th, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. I was just playing for you CNN's Sam Vinograd, taking exception to the fact that President Trump talked about how he's on the front lines of protecting America's interests, defining America's values, reclaiming our nation's priceless heritage, which happens to be under attack by people who want to eradicate it. It's gotten to the point where, I can't remember if it was Texas or North Carolina, I think it was here in Texas, they passed a bill. So much of our heritage, our culture is being destroyed. Find one thing wrong with somebody, you tear down any monument of them, erase that, so that we hate everything that has to do with America. Of course, you know, when the other cultures do this, we don't pay any attention to it. We let it pass. I think it was here in Texas that a legislator has proposed that any monument that is past a certain age, I forget what the number was, 3 years, 20 years or something like that, cannot be torn down. That's how bad it's gotten. That's how crazy it's gotten. You know, there's a quote, the past is a foreign country. It really is. And when you have these people who are leading this, the boots on the ground of the Green New Deal, the newly minted fascists who call themselves socialists, that have been brainwashed throughout their education, have had no life experience, don't know anything about history from any studies, except what they've been gaslighted into being taught. You know, everything that America does is bad. As we have these people hitting the streets, they are trying to shut down free speech everywhere. And this apparatchik, Sam Vinograd, who was out there comparing President Trump to Putin, as I said, we're going to break, actually is something that Joe Biden said. Said, well, he sounds like Hitler. He sounds like Putin. Juvenile. Puerile. This is what CNN has become. This is why they are collapsing in the ratings. And when they talk about, just reclaiming our heritage, that's something that needs to be defended and reclaimed from these people. Now, the past is a foreign country to these people, but it's one country like America that they have no knowledge of, no respect for. These people who say they're multiculturalists, they're not. They want to impose a one-size-fits-all. They've got a gray culture that is anesthetized and censored with political correctness in order to control people, and they want to impose that across the globe. Just take a look at Europe, that place that was a rich tapestry that truly was multicultural. They want to shut down every one of those cultures and impose a culture that is straight out of the, behind the Iron Curtain, the eastern side of the Iron Curtain. It is Kafkaesque what they want to do. And they don't tolerate people who are immigrants from the foreign country that the past represents. I'm one of those immigrants. I'm an undocumented guy from the past, I guess, but they don't have any respect for me. So as President Trump was speaking, one of the things he had to say was that he's going to issue an order that would protect free speech on campus. Now, wait until they freak out about that, right? We all know that free speech is not allowed on college campuses because they want to be able to control speech. That's where the censorship tactics began, where the political correctness, the Marxist tactics were fine-tuned. And then they send these people out to work in Silicon Valley and elsewhere. Trump brought on stage with him on Saturday. Hayden Williams made the point that he had been censored. And he said, we're not going to have any more of that. And quite frankly, that's a great idea. I don't know why this hasn't been done before. When you look at how they misapply the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment and how rigorous and how religious they are about stamping out anyone's free exercise of religion, the secular humanists have their God. These atheists have their gods, and they are fiercely worshipped. And they will stamp out anybody's free exercise of religion. And they will use the fact that the government gives money to college campuses to stamp out the free expression of religion. And now President Trump is saying we're going to use that leverage that has been used to try to stamp out the free expression of religion. We're going to use that to make sure that you don't shut down free speech. Brilliant. Brilliant. Good example of this is a University of Tennessee in Knoxville. Not waiting to investigate before making a broad public denunciation of its own students and launching an inquisition. Why? Because they had selfies of themselves putting on a mask to get rid of acne. Now the mask was black. Oh, so therefore we've got to flip out about that. These are the same people, you know, this is a mask to attack acne. It has a purpose. They're not ridiculing black people. Not like that pimple who is currently the governor of Virginia, Northam. You know, and what he was doing with those pictures that are being released, when they released those pictures, that was a mask to keep people from looking at what he was saying about abortion. But yeah, you want to ignore the real racist Northam. As a matter of fact, you know, I've got a stack of stuff here about Michael Jackson and where this whole pedophile movement is going. And you know, when Northam stepped in it with being unintentionally honest about what he wants to do with babies who are born alive. I've got a clip of somebody who was a bit more explicit about that too, an undercover clip talking about that. I'm going to play for you. But as he got caught with that, and that wasn't looking too good for him, then they came up with this blackface to try to distract everybody. And then in order for him to try to distract everyone from that embarrassing thing, he said, well, I was dressing up like Michael Jackson. Well, you might want to rethink that one too. Talk about jumping out of the frying pan into the fire. I was only doing an impersonation of a pedophile here. So we'll tell you about that documentary, the reactions to it. And one person who's been following this for 25 years wrote an article on Vanity Fair that was linked all weekend by Matt Drudge, because the documentary, first part aired last night, second part airs tonight, and we'll get into that in just a moment. But is there really an emergency at the border? I think there really is an issue, an emergency in terms of free speech. And I think President Trump needs to have that executive order to protect free speech, but I think we need to have an executive order to protect the border as well. You know, one of the things that is kind of interesting is the people in El Salvador, where MS-13 is headquartered. Of course, MS-13 could never have gotten a foothold here in the United States without the sanctuary city policies in Los Angeles. Now they have metastasized all the way across the country. A lot of MS-13 up in New York suburbs and Long Island and so forth. But it's so bad that members of the El Salvador police are seeking asylum. Those are people who probably really need it. Problem is, if they come into this country and we don't protect the borders, it'll be just like the father who came from El Salvador to try to protect his kids from MS-13, and it was MS-13 thugs protected by DACA that killed his kids.
Defending the American dream. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We have, as I said, going to break a lot of policemen from El Salvador saying MS-13 is in control here to the extent that they are targeting us for assassination. We need to get out of this country. Can you help us? And as I said, it isn't going to help them because we've already seen this in Long Island. A father whose child was killed in school by MS-13 gang members. You know, they know that they are illegal. Oh, but they're dreamers. So protect them, even though there is no Dream Act. There was never any Dream Act. But we all have to defer to presidential executive orders by Obama, not by President Trump. None of President Trump's executive orders should be listened to. They are all unconstitutional. They are all straight out of the Third Reich, if you listen to the press. But all of Obama's executive orders, nobody has a problem with that. Well, just pretend that they were somehow valid. You know, just they become law just like a Supreme Court decision becomes law. Supreme Court decision is not law either. It is an opinion. And the Supreme Court regularly reverses itself on things like that. Just look at Dred Scott. Take a look at the case with the film director, Spirit of 76, who was jailed by Woodrow Wilson because he wanted to get into World War I on the side of the British, and that was a movie about the American Revolution. He tried to censor it. The guy said, I'm not going to let you censor my film. They gave him a massive fine, put him in jail for 10 years. I think he got out like 3 to 5 years or something like that, but he actually served years in jail for that. The Supreme Court said there is no First Amendment that applies to films. Let's hear Hollywood outraged about that. They didn't get First Amendment protection recognized by the Supreme Court until the 1950s. But, of course, anything the Supreme Court says is final. And we're going to let this double standard apply. Anything that President Trump, President Obama did, rather, is now written in stone. President Trump, if he tries to undo anything that Obama did, he's Hitler or he's Putin. Because they can't think of anybody other than, you know, he's Genghis Khan or what? No, it's always Hitler or Putin. The good one's law, right? And so we have this father whose kid was killed by these MS-13 members. You know, everybody knew they were here illegally. They were dreamers. They were okay. They had MS-13 tattoos. That's okay. We just got to watch them until they do something like kill a kid. Then we can do something about it, perhaps. We can drop them off across the border and just let them cross back over again. And the father said, I brought my kids here because I didn't want this to happen in El Salvador. And it's like, well, guess what? The border is open. That means that you're not protecting, you know, a peaceful immigrant who's coming here for a better life because we don't pay any attention to legal versus illegal immigration because we don't know who's coming across the border. That father from El Salvador had his kids killed. Same thing's going to happen to these cops if they get here. We don't have any way to keep El Salvador from following them into the United States if we have open borders. Oh, but it's not an emergency. The NORTHCOM chief says so. He says so. It's a joke in my family. My daughter, as she's beginning to learn to speak English, she called me Baba. It's kind of funny, isn't it, how the names for mother and father are the same throughout all these different cultures, different languages. Mama is pretty much the same in every language. You have Papa, or in many countries, Baba is what they say. And she would say, Baba say so. You know, that was like final. He said so. So now you all do what he said. Well, so, you know, the NORTHCOM chief tells lawmakers no military threat. Baba say so. Shut up. That's it. It's final. At the U.S.-Mexico border, there is no threat. No emergency. You know, those armed gangs that have killed more people, hand-to-hand combat, far more people in hand-to-hand combat than died in Syria. I mean, we got a clip coming up here. Appears that the U.S. government has dropped white phosphorus, which is forbidden by International Convention on ISIS. I don't have any sympathy for ISIS, but let's not become war criminals, okay? Let's not become the thing that we fight. I've just been listening to a book, I mentioned this before, on Operation Paperclip by Andy Jacobson. It's a real moral turning point in this country when we did that. We didn't import only the science and technology. We imported Nazi values along with those scientists and technology. We brought those people in and we said, well, we've got a dangerous enemy here that's developing in the Cold War. We got to defeat them. So anything goes. Once you say that the end justifies the means, you're no different from these communist mobs. You're no different from the Antifa mobs when you embrace that kind of stuff. So we'll be talking about that later on. But, you know, the NORTHCOM chief says there's no military emergency, even though we just, you know, every day we see more people shot in Cancun and other places. 5 shot dead in Cancun cartel attack. And that was just last week. And we don't have to worry about that, right? We don't have to worry about MS-13 coming in from a country where it's so dangerous that the police are saying, please get me out of here. I can't handle this. They're targeting those police. And then, you know, we should give special privileges to all the foreign citizens who come here for a free education at our expense. All the foreign citizens who criminally trespass here for whatever reason, they get special privileges. Southern Poverty Law Center says so. Baba say so. We've had seven illegal immigrants are suing the American government. Why? Well, you profiled us. You identified us. You're not allowed to do that. We're foreign citizens. We can come here and do whatever we want. We can get on welfare. We can avoid taxes. This is what these people are doing. We can take your jobs. You have no authority to ask for our ID. That's profiling. And so these seven illegal immigrants were arrested in IRS raid at a meatpacking company. I don't like the IRS, but if we're going to have bad rules, let's apply them equally to everybody so we can get them changed. This meatpacking company hired these illegal foreigners. The meatpacking company was illegally hiring them. These people came here illegally. The meatpacking company was cheating on their taxes. These people were not paying their taxes as illegal immigrants. And yet, they're privileged. Don't look at them. Don't do an identity check on them. And they're being defended by the Southern Poverty Law Center. So, and with all that as context, when I look at Rand Paul and Justin Amash out there standing on the Constitution, I'm saying, where were you when these other things were being done by the Obama administration? Where were you when the Constitution is being trashed left, right, and center? You know, we have organized violations of our border that are happening right now. And they're being done, in most cases, to exploit our unconstitutional welfare system. That's the whole strategy. Don't you understand? Cloward and Piven? They wanted to get everybody on the welfare state, and people weren't buying into that. They realized that it was a trap. We've had a lot of economists talk about how it has destroyed the black family, people whose families get on welfare. It is a trap. Stay off of it. So not enough people were getting on it to collapse the country quickly enough for the Democrat economists, Cloward and Piven. So the mid-2000s, they said, well, let's bring in foreigners. Because the foreigners will go on the American welfare system, and they do. What was it, 63-65% of them are on welfare? That will collapse the welfare system. It'll collapse our education system. It'll collapse our housing, too. Because we have to pay, typically, the schools that we're building for all the foreign kids who are coming here with no limitations whatsoever, and we have to give them a free education. K through 12 right now, if the Democrats get elected, it'll be all the way through graduate school. They'll never get out of college because it's such an effective brainwashing tactic that they've got. But that's going to collapse us. We have this unconstitutional welfare state. Fight that. Fight the old New Deal. Justin Amash, Rand Paul. Fight the fact that we've got unconstitutional actions from the Obama administration going over the head of Congress, stealing money that Congress refused to allocate so they could get Obamacare subsidies, more of the welfare state. So you could fight the welfare state, you could fight Obamacare at the same time, and let President Trump do his constitutional duty to defend this country. Welcome back. Folks, if you want to support this broadcast, it's the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com that funds us. And we have now back with popular demand, we have Survival Shield X2, Nason Iodine. And you can pre-order that right now at 25% off. Just go to InfoWarsStore.com. We also have some specials, Alpha Power 50% off. Also, a great pairing with Alpha Power is Bod Ease. That's our turmeric formula. Pure turmeric combined with other powerful natural ingredients, that is now 50% off Bod Ease. It's going to help support your whole health. That fights inflation. Turmeric is very, very powerful, even though it is a natural ingredient. Doesn't have any side effects. You know, it's a spice, essentially, from India. But the ingredients in that are very, very effective when used with other ingredients in combination. Very, very effective at fighting inflammation, things that are going to cause you pain and stiffness in your joints. So Bod Ease is now available at 50% off. Finally, we have the InfoWars Life protein bars we introduced about 2 weeks ago. It's 240 calories only, but it has 15 grams of natural protein. It is packed with fiber. You can get it in vanilla coconut or chocolate peanut butter. Give this a try. You will not believe how good these protein bars are, especially compared to every other protein bar that I've had. It doesn't taste at all like a protein bar. It tastes great. You can get that 40% off if you get two boxes or more. Again, available in vanilla coconut or chocolate peanut butter at InfoWarsStore.com. One of the things that happened this week, besides President Trump's speech, of course, is the beginning of this fight over Michael Jackson's legacy, if you will. And the way I'd put it is they're finally taking the gloves off. One of the gloves dropped off of Michael Jackson's legend a while back, and now the other one is coming off. BBC Radio, purportedly, this is being reported by the Daily Mail, drops Michael Jackson songs after the new abuse claims in this documentary. They say the decision was reportedly made last week ahead of this documentary, Leaving Neverland, about the star's alleged crimes. They said in an interview with BBC last week that the abuse, individual who was talking to the BBC, because they've got their own documentary going, said the abuse started when he was only 7 years old. He said, every time I stayed the night with him, Michael Jackson, he abused me, fondling, touching my entire body. The estate of Michael Jackson is suing HBO for that documentary, suing them for $100 million. They tried to get an injunction to stop it from airing. That did not stop it from airing. It aired, again, the first part last night. The other part is today. Both Mr. Robson and Mr. Safetruck, these are two people who in the past had defended Jackson. They offered testimony in a court case that he had not abused them. They're older now. And as the person who's followed this for 25 years said, it takes a very long time for people to come to terms with this abuse that happens to them as a child, especially men. She said, it typically happens when the men have children of their own. And now they are speaking out in this documentary. They said that the BBC has done this in the past to Gary Glitter. He was jailed for 16 years in 2015 for having sex with a 12-year-old fan, attempting to rape an 8-year-old, and indecent assault. He also disappeared from the airwaves of the BBC. But, of course, the BBC spokesman said, it's not true. We haven't taken Michael Jackson off. We have never dropped anybody. maybe he's part of the group that shut down the documentary on Jimmy Savile. But let's play a little bit of the trailer for Leaving Neverland. This is the special that's got everybody so upset.
Just kid things. They were just doing kid things.
He just came across as a loving, caring, kind soul. It was easy to believe that he was just that.
Out of a storybook, right? Out of a fairy tale.
Hello, Wade. Today is your birthday. So congratulations. I love you. Goodbye.
Wow. There's no thoughts of this is wrong or anything like that.
He told me if they ever found out what we were doing, he and I would go to jail for the rest of our lives.
Secrets will eat you up. You feel so alone.
I want to be able to speak the truth as loud as I had to speak the lie for so long.
Boy, that's very powerful. This person, Maureen Orth, who writes in Vanity Fair, this article that was up on Drudge all weekend, 10 undeniable facts about the Michael Jackson sexual abuse allegations. She starts out by saying when she first started investigating this, the anguished voice of Wade Robson's father will always haunt me. She said back in 1993, when the first charges of sexual abuse were leveled at Michael Jackson by a 13-year-old boy named Jordy Chandler, I was assigned to write about the case for Vanity Fair. And she talks about how there was a wealth of information that came out about this. But let me just distill it down to the 10 points that she ends the article with. Number one, she said, there is no dispute that at age 34, Michael Jackson slept more than 30 nights in a row in the same bed with 13-year-old Jordy Chandler at the boys' house with Chandler's mother present. He also slept in the same bed with Jordy Chandler at Chandler's father's house. The parents were divorced. Number two, so far, five boys that Michael Jackson shared beds with have accused him of abuse. Number three, Jackson paid $25 million to settle the Chandler's lawsuit. Number four, Michael Jackson suffered from the skin discoloration disease, vitiligo, I guess is the way you pronounce it. Jordy Chandler drew a picture of markings on Jackson's genitalia. The drawings were sealed in an envelope. A few months later, investigators photographed Jackson's genitalia, and the photographs matched the drawings that had been done by the young boy. Number five, the hallway leading to Jackson's bedroom was a serious security zone, covered by video and wired for sound, so the steps of anyone approaching would make ding-dong sounds, you know, to warn him, right? Somebody's coming. Number six, Jackson had an extensive collection of adult erotic material he kept in a suitcase next to his bed, including S&M bondage photos and a study of naked boys. Forensic experts with experience in the Secret Service found the fingerprints of boys alongside Jackson's on the same pages. Number seven, according to Neverland staff interviewed by the Santa Barbara authorities, no one ever saw or knew of a woman spending the night with Michael Jackson, including his two spouses, Debbie Rowe or Lisa Marie Presley. Rowe, the mother of two of Jackson's children, made it clear to the Santa Barbara authorities that she'd never had sex with Jackson. Number eight, the parents of boys Jackson shared beds with were courted assiduously and given myriad expensive gifts. And in the body of this article, she talks about how they were given homes, they were given cars, they were given cash, lavish vacations and so forth, helping one family immigrate to the United States. Nine, two of the families of those who have accused Jackson, Jordy Chandler and Jimmy Safechuck, committed suicide. Two of the fathers committed suicide. Both were estranged from their sons at the time. Number 10, in a 2002 documentary, Living with Michael Jackson, Jackson told Martin Bashir, there is nothing wrong with sharing his bed with boys. So for all of you who are making an excuse for Michael Jackson because you like his music, or because, like maybe Ralph Northam, you used to like to dress up as him in college. Yeah, right. Just think about what you are embracing here. You know, CNN, of course, takes his side. CNN. Always on the wrong side of every issue. They say, reactions to leaving Netherland vary. Some say that Jackson was a monster. Others say the film is flawed. Well, CNN is on the side of the film is flawed. Just to put this in perspective, I don't have enough time to finish this up in this segment. We'll continue after the break. But when George Pell, the cardinal in Australia, was just sentenced to child abuse in one of the cases, remember, this is a guy who would not even stand trial for this if they hadn't changed the laws that the establishment politicians set up to make sure that there is a very short statute of limitations. It takes a long time, as we're seeing in this documentary, for people to come to grips with what is going on. But George Pell, the number three at the Vatican, was convicted of sexual assault against a couple of minors. And as the sentencing was being handed out, his lawyer got up and described to the judge and said, well, this was just plain vanilla sexual penetration case where the child is not actively participating. Can you believe that? The judge couldn't believe it. The judge was absolutely amazed. The judge, Peter Kidd, he said, the behavior is callous, brazen, offensive, shocking conduct. The lawyer said, there's no aggravating circumstances. It's no more than plain vanilla sexual penetration case where the child is not actively participating. And the judge said, it must be clear to you by now. I'm struggling with that.
Without the freedom to offend, there is no free speech. It's the David Knight Show. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. Let's talk a little bit about whether or not it really matters to you about Michael Jackson. Are you going to stop listening to his records? I mean, the BBC said we've got two different stories from them. Some people on the inside told Daily Mail they're not going to play his records anymore. But BBC spokesperson said, no, that's not the case. We don't ever ban any artists. You don't ban any artists no matter what they do? I mean, what if Adolf Hitler had recorded some love songs to Eva Braun? Springtime for Hitler, maybe. I don't know. You going to play that? Yeah, I think they would have a problem with certain content, don't you? I think they would have a problem if President Trump recorded a song. I think the BBC probably wouldn't play that. I think they would probably ban him. But they're not going to ban Michael Jackson, according to the guy, even though apparently they have, at least for the time being. It's going to get a lot of criticism if, as this documentary, Leaving Neverland, is playing, they are, you know, you watch that and immediately turn on their BBC radio and you hear Michael Jackson playing. You know, what the heck, right? That should be your reaction to this, quite frankly. It should make you disgusted. You should be disgusted at this lawyer in Australia, Pell's lawyer, Cardinal Pell's lawyer, Richter is the guy's name, telling the judge, Judge Kidd, well, there's no aggravating circumstances here. This is very similar to what we just heard from Ian McKellen talking about Kevin Spacey, quite frankly. And he says it's no more than just plain vanilla sexual penetration case where the child is not actively participating. The judge says, it must be clear to you by now that I'm struggling with that submission. Looking at your points here, so what? So what? Right? Haven't we agreed that a child can't give consent? Isn't that why we have statutory rape? It's like, I don't care what you do to these kids, how you gaslight them, how you seduce them. That's going to be off limits, simply because it's easy to seduce a child. We're going to go with the assumption that a child cannot give consent. And so we're going to draw that line at that point, regardless of what we're talking about here. What kind of sex? If it's heterosexual or homosexual, whatever, we're going to say kids can't consent to any of this stuff. And yet, we're being told that kids can consent to having their gender changed in kindergarten. And they can start taking these drugs at a very early age. Right now, they are taking the kids away from the parents. I've reported many times about how they're doing it to an 8-year-old here in the United States. It's not just Canada. The parents object. But you have the school saying, no, we're going to give them hormone treatments. They're going to leave them sterile. They're not going to ever be able to have kids. These are kids that are 8, and they're doing it to kids even younger. What's the point of that? The point of that is that we have to get past this problem of saying that children can't give consent so that the pedophiles can rape them. That's why I said this whole transgender agenda is to set up pedophilia, to get it out of the closet, to celebrate it. And quite frankly, I think that Michael Jackson's catalog is going to have a huge revival in about 5 to 10 years. When they bring the pedophiles out of the closet, you're going to see Michael Jackson being resurrected from the grave like some MTV replay of Thriller. He and all these ghouls are going to be prancing around with all the kids that they want to use. And I mean use. In this case in Australia, the lawyer for Cardinal Pell also tried to suggest the incident in which Pell grabbed one of the boys by the genitals was a fleeting moment and not worthy of jail. The judge disagreed. He said, there's nothing to be gained here by comparing different forms of sexual abuse of children. But if we can get rid of the idea that children can never give consent, then they're home free. And that's the whole process behind this transgender agenda of saying the children can consent to changing their gender. They know what's going on. We'll be right back.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We're still talking about Leaving Neverland because Michael Jackson created this play park for kids, for their families. And as soon as the children would reach puberty, he would throw them and their families to the curb. That's what they all said. Something about that was one of the strange things about Michael Jackson. But, of course, as this documentary is being aired and a lot of people are reacting, besides throwing up There are consequences for the Michael Jackson estate, a lot of monetary consequences for that. CNN comes to his rescue. Says, well, a lot of people disagree with this. They think these kids should have come forward earlier. So let's talk about what was said at the trial of Cardinal Pell. After he was found guilty, the lawyer gets up and during the sentencing phase, as I said to you, you know, he said, well, this is just plain vanilla sex penetration. The child is not actively participating. That's kind of the whole point, right? Children cannot consent. This is abuse. This is rape. This is rape of a child. But if we can embrace children being ripped apart and do that for decades, do that for tens of millions of kids, then why can't we embrace this? And if we can say that kids can determine what gender they're going to be in kindergarten, well, before they've had any hormones kick in, and we can alter them against the wishes of the parents in unalterable ways, permanently, sterilizing them, then what's the big deal with Michael Jackson, of course, right? The same objections that CNN is quoting against the accusers of Michael Jackson were used by the lawyer for Cardinal Pell. As the article from The Guardian points out, abuse survivors and advocates present in the court gasped as Richter, the lawyer for Pell, made his arguments for a lower-end sentence. He said at one point, if Pell's victims were, quote, truly distressed, unquote, after being abused, they would have returned to their homes and exhibited that distress. The judge responded, you put to the jury that only a madman would commit these offenses, and the jury rejects that. There are no medical records suggesting that he is mad. The only inference I can make is that he thought he could get away with it. People don't go ahead and do what he did without thinking about it. People make choices. That's right. And then went on to say his state of mind suggests that he had some degree of confidence as to the unlikelihood that these boys would complain. Well, you heard in that Leaving Neverland trailer, one of the now adult victims who says that he was a victim, alleges that he was a victim of Michael Jackson, said that Michael Jackson told him, if you ever tell anybody about this, you and I will go to jail for the rest of our lives. Well, the priests, as I've heard, I've interviewed people from SNAP, which is the Survivors Network for those abused by priests. I interviewed them. They were there. Quite a few of them were there at the World Family Conference in Philadelphia. The Pope, this current Pope, went to the site of the worst pedophile child abuse that we've seen anywhere. He went to the very heart of it there in Philadelphia to hold a family conference. And he brought in clergy who had to flee from Pennsylvania because of their involvement in covering up people. He brought them in to celebrate that. That's his family values. And so these people showed up to talk about their story. I interviewed a couple of them. And one of the things that they said was very similar to what Michael Jackson said, the threats made to these children. Jackson says, you tell anybody, we'll go to jail the rest of our life. The priests told their victims, if you tell anybody, you will go to hell the rest of your life, for eternity, I should say, not for the rest of your life. You will go to hell for eternity. That's the way these people roll against children. And again, last week I talked to Leo Zagami. He was talking about how the second case against Pell was dropped. They kept the verdict of this first case under seal, under wraps, even though we knew about it back in December. They just released this information because they decided they weren't going to do a second trial of another incident that revolved around a public swimming pool 40 years before. One of the reasons they did that was because the individual just recently died, as Leo Zagami pointed out. He died of leukemia. But he had come forward alleging that Pell had abused him in a public swimming pool. There was another person who had also come forward. That person also died. He was a former drug dealer. He died of a drug overdose. Dignan was the surviving individual who just recently died. Once he died, they said, that's it. We can't go forward with the trial. Dignan also accused other teachers at this particular school, the St. Alpius School of Abuse. he accused them of abuse, but I guess we could call it that. That was a school of abuse. Frankly, they had a guy there, as Leo Zagami points out, who was kind of a mentor, or at least a partner, to Cardinal Pell. His name is Gerald Ridsdale. Zagami wrote at the end of the last week, he said, Cardinal Pell finally is in prison like his pedophile mentor. This guy was at that school of abuse, I guess we could say. Gerald Ridsdale was an Australian laicized Catholic priest and a serial pedophile. He was convicted between 1993 and 2017 of a huge number of child sexual abuse and indecent assault charges against 65 children, as young as 4 years old. But the true number of his victims is said to be in the hundreds by victims advocacy group Broken Rights. The offenses occurred from the 1960s to the 1980s while he worked as a school chaplain at that school for abuse. The Royal Commission in Australia into Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse found that senior figures in the church knew about his abusing of children, but protected him over and over again because he was connected to Cardinal Pell. And so now the two of them are in jail. So when we look at this, and we look at the case of Michael Jackson, when we look at what the lawyer for Cardinal Pell is saying, well, you know, it's not any big deal. You know, he didn't, it wasn't aggravated assault. He just raped this kid. Ian McKellen had an interview on a podcast where he made some interesting statements about some of his friends and colleagues, Brian Singer and Kevin Spacey. He said, you know, most of them were in the closet at the time. So all their problems as people and their relationship with other people, if they had been able to be open about themselves and their desires, Kevin Spacey and Brian Singer wouldn't have started abusing people in the way that they've been accused. Oh, really? Is that right? Now, he has apologized. So, as a matter of fact, has the lawyer for Cardinal Pell apologized. That doesn't mean that these statements aren't outrageous. It doesn't mean that that isn't what they think. And here's what Ian McKellen went on to say. He says, I think that's rather up to the public whether those who are accused of abuse should be forced to stop working. That's debatable, he said. Do you want to see someone who's been accused of something that you don't approve of? Do you ever want to see them again? If the answer is no, you won't buy a ticket. You won't turn on the television. You won't turn on the radio to listen to Michael Jackson. But there may be others for whom that's not a consideration, says Ian McKellen. And as I said, that is the essence of it, isn't it? It really is up to the public. Are we going to tolerate this? Are we going to say, well, you know, I don't really approve of him abusing children, raping women, whatever the situation is. I mean, these people have been accused of various types of abuse. Some of it adults, some of it children, but it's still abuse, right? There is still no consent. The children cannot consent. But he thinks that if they'd been able to be open about it, they wouldn't have done this type of thing. So what they're going to say to you is if they can be open about their love for children and they don't have to be in the closet about that, then we can all just celebrate that and accept that. That is where we're headed. I'll give you more details about that on the other side of the break. It is truly disgusting what is going on with it. But it all began with abortion, didn't it? We'll be right back. Welcome back. Here we're talking about what's going on with the Michael Jackson documentary, Leaving Neverland. But this is a cancer that unfortunately is not limited to Michael Jackson. It's a mindset that is permeating our culture. And they are preparing something for our children, for our grandchildren, that beggars belief, quite frankly. I mean, this is something that is... something that's been described in the Bible in Sodom and Gomorrah. Bring us your children. You know, they're going to, this is truly the mob as we see what's going on here with the transgender agenda. We see Ian McKellen saying, it's up to the public. You know, I don't think that people like Kevin Spacey or Brian Singer, who've been accused of multiple sexual assaults against people, including underage people, he says, I think it's debatable whether they should be taken out of the public limelight. I think it's up to the public. Do you want to see somebody that's been accused of something that you don't approve of? There's the moral relevance of this crowd. And then he finishes up by saying, you know, frankly, I'm waiting for somebody to accuse me of something, and I'm wondering if they're not telling the truth and me having forgotten. That's absolutely no morals, no scruples. And I'm sad to say that because I really have enjoyed his work. You know, enjoyed Lord of the Rings, the many different characters he's done. He did a brilliant modern interpretation of Richard III. But quite frankly, this guy is disgusting. I don't know if I can watch his stuff anymore. Ian McKellen. The Canadian Supreme Court and other courts in California and elsewhere are falling into all of this as well. As Alex talked about extensively on InfoWars, Canadian Supreme Court is ruling children to be taken from their parents and sterilized under a transgender agenda. That's right, they're going to change their sex before these kids even get close to puberty. Supreme Court of British Columbia has ruled that parents no longer have a say in their children's upbringing. And these children can be recognized by the state as transgender against the wishes of the parents. Children in the UK will now be forced to learn about gay and trans relationships in school. They say the new curriculum will make it mandatory for schools to teach students about gay and trans relationships in both primary and secondary schools. They would prevent parents' rights to remove their child out of classes in secondary school. And they do this all in the name of protecting people from being bullied. Same thing is happening right now in Austin. You know, typically the UK is way ahead in this sliding to Gomorrah. But California and, of course, Austin aren't far behind. In this case, Austin is right there in sync with some of the most radical Prague agendas out there. UK schools approve guidelines to teach kids that boys can have periods. This is the insanity that they're promoting out there. Completely detached from any biological reality whatsoever. And you must celebrate that because it's diversity. And if you don't celebrate it, they will bring you to heel. This is the point at which the conflict is going to begin. At what point will you say, I'm not going to celebrate this? Trans boys and men and non-binary people may have periods, according to published guidelines in the UK. So is it any wonder that we have these kinds of situations with the very rich and powerful? Why are they pushing this so hard? Why is this something that all of a sudden they're pushing so hard? Well, it may be because, as we see, people in power, people like Cardinal Pell, people like Dennis Hastert, people like Jeffrey Epstein, people like Michael Jackson, all of these connected, successful entertainers, people who are close to those who are in power, the people who write the laws, who shut down the due process of children who have been abused, putting on these absurd statute of limitations on this. There should be no statute of limitations. That's one thing that Australia certainly got right. But it's going to be difficult enough, as survivors of some of this child abuse I spoke to in Philadelphia said, you know, when you can't process this when it happens to you as a child. How are the children then supposed to be able to process this transgender stuff? Do they really understand what's going on? No, of course they don't. Again, they haven't come anywhere close to puberty. They're pushing this on kids in kindergarten. But the survivors of this abuse said it can take us decades to come to terms with this. And after decades, if the person is still alive, it's pretty hard to prove a crime that is decades old. That's enough of an issue right there. That's enough of a hurdle. You don't need a statute of limitations unless you are hell-bent on covering this up because you're somebody like Dennis Hastert, who was groomed by the GOP, selected because he was a pedophile, groomed by him, kept in the position of leadership, Speaker of the House, longer than anybody else. Let's take a look at Epstein here. If you haven't been following this, we now have Alan Dershowitz, the new darling of the right, because he defended Trump, rightfully so, against this phony Russiagate stuff. But Alan Dershowitz was also defending Jeffrey Epstein. That doesn't mean that Epstein and Trump are equivalent to each other. That's the way that the left is trying to portray this. It means he's a lawyer. He's a high-profile lawyer. But what he has said about due process and how we don't want to have a witch hunt, bring me the man, I'll find the crime, that is something that belongs in Soviet Russia. That's what Joseph Stalin did to people. We don't want that kind of standard here in the United States. And he's absolutely right to oppose that. But, of course, he was also there defending Jeffrey Epstein. And we have recently, just in the last week or so, we had a federal judge ruled in a lawsuit that was brought by the victims of Jeffrey Epstein. He only went to jail for 13 months. He could have gone to jail, should have gone to jail, in my opinion, for the rest of his life. He got off because he had a lot of powerful lawyers besides Alan Dershowitz. It's kind of interesting to me that people talk a lot about Alan Dershowitz there, but they don't talk about the fact that Ken Starr defended him. Ken Starr. You may not realize that Ken Starr defended Bill Clinton. He didn't prosecute Bill Clinton. He defended Bill Clinton. He made sure that the real crimes were not brought up, and he went after a consensual affair and got him for a technicality of perjury and covered up the big crimes. The big crimes were covered up by Ken Starr. And then Ken Starr went to help Jeffrey Epstein. And then after that, he became president at Baylor Christian University because, you know, Ken Starr had these wonderful Christian credentials. And there he covered up for the football team that had real abuse charges against it. And I think three strikes and he's out. But, of course, also, Labor Secretary Alex Acosta was on the prosecution side. So it's basically Ken Starr, Alex Acosta, Alan Dershowitz, all working together to get Jeffrey Epstein off and then to prevent victims from challenging any of this and sealing everything up. And now this may come out and the cockroaches may start to scramble.
Of deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. You know, the elites, Alex Acosta, Alan Dershowitz, Ken Starr, they all work together to make sure that the guy who was kind of the pedophile pimp for the elites, Jeffrey Epstein, only got 13 months in prison instead of a lifetime charge. And then they sealed the records. And now the victims have sued, and a federal judge has ruled in a lawsuit by the victims that Acosta and other attorneys who worked at the U.S. Attorney's Office of South Florida violated federal law when they sealed the plea deal. And, of course, if you remember, we were talking about Kevin Spacey as Ian McKellen defends him. Says, you know, remember, he was in the closet. If he'd been able to be out and open about all this stuff, then he probably wouldn't have abused these people like that. I go, really? I don't know. I think it's something of a power trip thing. Nevertheless, it is an argument that will be made. He says, oh, you find it reprehensible what they did? Well, you know, you have a right not to watch their movies or whatever. Well, that's what the estate of Michael Jackson is concerned about, rightfully so. Fortunately for me, I never liked his music. I did like the work of Ian McKellen. I don't know that I can watch him again, quite frankly, after what he had to say. Not only saying that, but then saying, will there be people coming forward about me? Will they say that it's true? And maybe it is. Maybe I forgot. Who cares, right? Who cares? So Kevin Spacey was also one of the people on Jeffrey Epstein's Lolita Express, along with Bill Clinton and others. Being ferried to Orgy Island, they would call the plane the Lolita Express because it would have so many young people on it. Of course, Kevin Spacey has always been the toast of the elite. Remember, he used to be one of the featured raconteurs at Davos. They called him the King of Davos. If you remember, he just before he was taken down, he was out there coming after President Trump at the Davos that happened before President Trump became President Trump. He was ridiculing him. So they have now a trove of emails that apparently show how Acosta and other prosecutors worked with Epstein's high-profile lawyers to conceal the deal. So prosecutors and defense attorneys are working to conceal this. Then, you know, some of the stuff that may come out about this, Dershowitz is now, as this is rolling on over the weekend, Dershowitz came out and said, we need to keep this sealed. We need to have a press blackout during this reopening of this for the civil lawsuit. They don't want this information to come out. I wonder if when it does come out, and the truth will come out eventually, if he's going to be caught making the same types of statements we just saw the lawyer for Cardinal Pell make. You know, oh, it's just plain vanilla sex. You know, the child is not actively participating. Just think about that. A child is not actively participating. Well, then that means it's not consensual. And, of course, a child can't give consent. It says, particularly problematic was the government's decision to conceal the existence of the agreement and mislead the victims to believe the federal prosecution was still a possibility, wrote the judge. When the government gives information to victims, it cannot be misleading. While the government spent untold hours negotiating the terms and implications of the agreement with Epstein's attorneys, scant information was shared with victims. And now Dershowitz wants this. He's desperate to get this thing gagged. So we'll see what happens with that. Again, Epstein is should have been in for life in prison. He wants to, Alan Dershowitz asked whether the media should be excluded from the proceedings because of his oral arguments. His oral arguments. Yeah, it's probably stuff exactly like we saw the lawyer for Cardinal Pell say. Meanwhile, last week we just had an Argentinian model found dead in bed after predicting her own demise in a tweet a few months before that. Natasha Jayet, I'm assuming that's the way it's pronounced, a model, a socialite, and a TV presenter, who threatened to expose a high-level pedophile ring among Argentina's elite, was found dead after suffering an apparent drug overdose. Oh, gee, that's kind of like one of Cardinal Pell's accusers suffered a drug overdose. The other one died of leukemia. At a party outside Buenos Aires on Saturday, months before her death, she predicted her demise on social media. She tweeted out, she said, I will not commit suicide. I won't be bought off. I won't drown in a bathtub, nor will I shoot myself in the head. So if that happens, uppercase, all uppercase. It wasn't me. And then she wrote, save this tweet. That was last April. And here we are 10 months later, and she dies of a drug overdose. Kind of what happened with a DC madam coming on and being interviewed with Alex Jones. And she was giving some very incriminating evidence against some very powerful people. And Alex said, let's just clear the record as to your state of mind. You are not depressed, right? Are you depressed? Are you suicidal? Absolutely not. She was very clear about that. She turned up dead in a very short period of time. Similar situation with Gary Webb. The guy who exposed our government, our intelligence services, those wonderful intelligence services that we've told were always above board until they came after President Trump. No, they have a long history of this type of stuff. They created a crack cocaine epidemic so they could fund their dirty, secret, unconstitutional war of regime change in Central America. Gary Webb exposed it. They created a team of journalists and at the Los Angeles Times to smear him and to destroy his career. And then we were told that he committed suicide. It was first reported that he shot himself twice in the head. Yeah. So this is another one of these cases. Again, somebody who was going to expose an elite pedophile ring in Argentina turns up dead. After she said, I'm not going to commit suicide. So when we look at all this, and we look at where this is going, and I truly do believe that this transgender issue is at the center of this. It is why these people, this is what they're pinning their hopes on, that they'll be able to come out of the closet, that they'll be able to say, just like this lawyer for Cardinal Pell, it was just plain vanilla sex, and the kid consented because, you know, the kid had already decided at an earlier age that the kid was a different sex, right? Born a boy, decided that he was a girl, and if you're responsible enough to make that kind of decision in kindergarten or before the age of 8, then of course you can make a decision that you want to have consensual sex with an adult. And look at how this is rolling out. Look at these elites in the UK. Meghan Markle and Prince Harry will be raising their baby as gender fluid, and they won't impose stereotypes on it. Well, really? Aren't they kind of stereotyping already? And aren't they denying natural drives of the child for their political correctness agenda? You know, whatever they do to this baby, it probably won't be any more bizarre than what happens as being a member of the royal family. The royal family has a long history of insanity, perversion, decadence. So I don't really know that this is all that much different. They're just going to be more open about it, and they're going to use this to push this agenda on other people. Oh, look, the royals are doing it. Meghan Markle is doing it, so we should all do this as well. She's openly talking about how she's going to raise her baby in a fluid way. You know, the headline from this Zero Hedge article, I think, says it all. It's not the internet that's dark. It's humanity, isn't it? But, of course, it is the elites at the top that are selling this. From the degrading comments and the vile posts and the fact that Google looks the other way for all the pedophile videos and comments. So now they came out and said, we'll just take out all comments on any videos that have kids on it. Well, you know, seriously, you can't moderate pedophile content, but you can get InfoWars off of Google. Your only solution is to start censoring regular videos about kids. That's your solution. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. We've got a lot of topics to get into, and I've just got one more thing I want to say about children, about the most innocent among us. Another undercover video about abortion. I want to get to that. Lynn, we're going to get it to, we're going to get into Big Pharma having a vaccine panic attack. We're going to talk about the censorship that unveiled itself at CPAC against Laura Loomer. She had the audacity to criticize Oliver Darcy, this so-called CNN reporter. I'm sorry. Reporters don't focus on shutting down other points of view. You want to focus and make it your life's work to shut down other press. You want to shut down free speech. Don't call yourself a reporter. Please don't call yourself a reporter. So she had the audacity to heckle him. And for that, CPAC did to her what Twitter did to Alex Jones when he confronted Oliver Darcy, a guy who was the attack dog for CNN. If he's got a different opinion on things, fine. Give us your opinion. Make your arguments. You could even debate us, whatever. But he had nothing to say. Instead, he plays a victim. Passive-aggressive victim. He doesn't want to debate. He doesn't want to offer his opinion. He wants to silence people. He is not a journalist. Oliver Darcy is a shill. He's not a journalist. So we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about what's going on with the Second Amendment as well. A couple of different things happening with law enforcement. Some law enforcement is pushing back, creating sanctuary counties in New Mexico. Whereas at the same time, when you got lawmakers in Kentucky doing the right thing, supporting the Second Amendment, you've got police departments and official police organizations pushing back in Kentucky. So we'll take a look at that. Also, some of the stuff that's coming on with the Green New Deal. I think maybe things have gotten to a difficult point for AOC and the green, quote-unquote, green socialists, the green reds. because I hate the whole idea that we allow the mainstream media to take the color red, which has always been self-identified and still is by the Antifa communists and so forth. They still carry the red flag and so forth, identify themselves as red, but we let them use that to as a label for people who don't support communism. That's how they can twist the agenda so easily. We're going to talk about what's going on with AOC and the others. NPR is basically out there pushing back on some of the green stuff. It doesn't say that the environmentalism is dangerous. It just says the Democrats are very worried these people have gone too far to the left. But real quickly, I want to take a look at this latest situation with abortion. This is an undercover video that resurfaced this week of a New York abortion worker telling a woman to drown her baby in a toilet if the baby is born alive before abortion is complete. Now, remember, this was done before you just had Governor Cuomo bragging about the fact and de Blasio so happy about the fact that they have extended abortion all the way through full term. At the time this video was done, this undercover video was done, if you wanted to get an abortion at 23 weeks of pregnancy, it was still legal. You could have it up to 24 weeks. She came in saying that she was 23 weeks pregnant. They allowed it up to 24 weeks. Now it's full term. As a matter of fact, after term, according to the Virginia governor. The baby's born, kill it. They don't have a problem with that. I want you to see exactly where these people are. That's why I want to play this video for you. When we can do this to babies, is it any wonder that they can sexually abuse children and support that? And that's really what's going on when they push this gender reassignment to kids in kindergarten. That right there is sexual abuse, and it is institutionalized by our government schools. But let's see what's going on here with the abortion clinic staffer advising this person. This is Emily's Women's Center in the Bronx. I don't know if they're associated with Emily's List. Emily's List puts a lot of money behind women candidates, only the ones who are rabidly pro-abortion. So this is being filmed in the Bronx, right there where AOC is the congresswoman. Let's roll that.
What if it was like twitching or like something like that? Like
the solution will make it stop.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not going to be moving.
Well, the solution will make it stop.
Okay. The solution would make it like.
Yeah. That's the whole purpose of the solution.
Okay. So like.
The final solution.
If it looked like it was like. Like breathing or something like that.
It'll automatically stop. It won't be able to.
It won't be. Okay. So I'm not even going to see it.
No.
Not
so,
with the solution.
Okay. So I mean, like, if that happens.
They sleep, they take it out, and it goes into our lab. Where they do the stuff with the jar and cleaning and all that.
Okay.
Well, they do the
so
stuff
what
with
is the
jar.
Solution? It's just like something like toxic or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have to
so
do that
like,
to keep it
maybe
clean.
Maybe it's Zyklon B.
And, you know, because by the time it gets to the lab, it still needs to be freshly, you know.
Yeah.
So they could weigh it, so it could be proper weight to make sure that everything came out of you. Like, there's no pieces left in you.
So, like, you'll make sure, like,
well,
I don't have to deal with it
no.
if it will die. Like,
You're done. Once you start this today, that's it. You're not going to see it. We're not going to show you your sonogram pictures. We're not going to, you know.
Yeah. All right. So, I'm like, if I feel like I'm having, like, labor pain kind of thing.
Yeah. Call us.
Call you.
Yeah. We have an emergency line.
Like, what if it, like, pops out, like, at home?
Yeah.
Like.
If it comes out.
Yeah.
Then it comes out. Then flush it.
Just like flush it.
Yeah, but you still have to come in.
Okay.
We have to make sure that everything came out. But we never had a situation like that.
Because if it's like, what if it's like on the floor? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, what would we do with it?
You're not going to be taking care of it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you guys would come
yes,
and like.
If anything, you know, we'll tell you to put it in a bag or something or somewhere and bring it to us. And then we have two different procedures all the time.
You do. It's like pretty common. Like,
yeah.
Even with me kind of stage.
Yeah.
Like, at this stage.
Like, every day.
Whatever happens at home, you know, like, don't call the hospital.
No. Call us.
Okay. Why? So why not call the hospital?
Because
like,
we started it first. The hospital won't take you. They won't touch you either because we started it. So whoever starts it has to finish.
Yeah. Yeah, have to finish it. Even if the baby survives, we got to finish it. Even if the baby is alive, separated from the mother, we have to finish it. And we can say that we're doing it to protect the life of the mother. You know, when she goes through here and she says, don't worry about it. You know, don't worry about the solution. Euphemism. This is Nazi science, folks. These people are just as reprehensible as the Nazis. That's one time that it is not Goodwin's law to compare people to Nazis. That's precisely what they're doing. But you notice that she said, don't worry about it. You're not going to see it. We're not going to show you any sonograms. Well, Focus on the Family is. They're going to go into, I don't know if they've done this yet or not, read it last week. They're going to have a rally, have people speak, and they're going to put up on the big Times Square billboards, they're going to show a live 3D ultrasound of a baby so they can see this is alive. But she said, don't worry about it. We're not going to show it to you. We're not going to show you any sonograms. You don't have to think about it as being alive. But what if the baby comes early? Well, just drown it in the toilet. What if it's like on the floor? You know, just kill it, bring it in. We'll weigh it. So we make sure you got all the parts. Because typically what they do when they DNC, they tear the baby in pieces, pull them out piece by piece. I don't know how you know because babies are different weights. How do you know that you got to do? You reassemble the baby that you've just torn up on a table or something? This is insane that we allow this and call this civilization. People have always talked about the German civilization. They were the most advanced culturally. They were the most advanced scientifically. And look what they were capable of. And I would say the same thing about us. Because if you don't have any moral center, if you can't respect human life, if you can't respect and protect the life of the most innocent among us, all that advanced science does is make you more dangerous. Take a look at the fact that we now have the HHS, Health and Human Services Department, is extending their contract of using aborted baby parts to create humanized mice. That is Nazi science. This is just absolutely insane that we're allowing this type of thing to happen. There are some pockets of sanity, not in New York. Here in Texas, we have Republican Representative Briscoe Kane has the Texas Heartbeat Bill, HB 1500. It would ban abortion after heartbeat detection, except in cases of medical emergencies. Current law allows abortion up to 20 weeks. Kane said that the heartbeat is a universally recognized sign of life. So is brainwaves. And I'm not sure which one happens earlier. But as we pointed out, in Missouri, they just put together a bill that includes all of those. You got a heartbeat, got a brainwave, got fingerprints, got hands that work. We're going to consider you to be human. And we're not going to let you be killed. And we're going to have that fight.
Broadcasting with the power of the First Amendment, you're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, President Trump spoke for 2 hours at CPAC. He got a wonderful welcome there. And he took on AOC over the Green New Deal. We're going to be talking about that coming up in the next segment. But one of the things that happened there at CPAC was not too good, quite frankly. CPAC started acting like these social media censors. They had Oliver Darcy there for CNN. He was not there as a reporter. He was there to smear people and to heckle people. But some types of smears are allowed and some types of heckling are allowed and other types are not. So when Laura Loomer, quote unquote, heckled him, she lost her CPAC press credentials. Shame on them. And quite frankly, I looked at the headlines of this, and I got to say, you know, I don't call myself a conservative. Please don't call me a conservative, especially don't call me alt-right. I don't like labels like that. I even have to qualify the labels libertarian now because of what the Libertarian Party is doing. I'm for liberty, period. That's why my handle on Twitter is Libertarian. Liberty is what we're trying to get, individual liberty. And we're trying to have a government that protects our liberty, protects our property, protects our lives. There are always people out there who are trying to take those things away from you. People will steal from you, kill you, and try to enslave you. That's why we create government. And I don't really see too many legitimate uses for government outside of that. But I think it's very shameful when a conservative organization buys into this censorship. Come on. He is a public figure. Oliver Darcy is a public figure. He's not a reporter. He is a shill for the people who want to shut down the free press, shut down free speech. He ought to be ashamed of himself. He's incapable of making arguments that can stand up. He won't debate anybody face to face. He stands there and looks like he's hurt. That passive aggressive nonsense is used by the people who want to censor anyway. You know, CPAC wants to be establishment. They want people in suits and ties. Fine, I wear suit and tie. So what? That doesn't mean that I agree with them on anything. But they want to have the establishment appearance. They want to be respected. And that's why they don't want to have Laura Loomer, Mark Dice, Alex Jones. They wouldn't want me there either. They would find some reason to throw me out as well, I'm sure. Laura Loomer said, it's egregious that CPAC and Matt Schlapp have decided to bow to the leftist outrage mob and ban one of President Trump's most prominent supporters. I'm extremely offended. I'm appalled that I've been banned by my own people. They're not your people. Your people would not ban you for exercising free speech. As I've said before, you go back and you look at the founders, you look at the attacks that they made against each other. It was a rough and tumble world. And you know what? If Oliver Darcy's skin is so thin that he can't handle a little bit of criticism from Laura Loomer, then get out of the business. Just quit. Instead of trying to shut other people down. You try to shut other people down because you can't compete. And it's shameful that CPAC would play that game. How's the Second Amendment doing? Well, we've got this war going on between legislatures and law enforcement agencies. To show you how this breaks down, in New Mexico, you had the Democrat legislature there put in some very comprehensive gun control legislation. Now, 21 out of New Mexico's 33 counties say they're going to refuse to enforce gun control. They call themselves Second Amendment sanctuary cities. But they're not cities. They're counties. 21 out of 33. Why is that happening? Because of sheriffs. That's why that happens at the county level. Looking the other way, Kentucky has a legislature that is friendly to the Second Amendment and to people's rights to keep and bear arms. And they are being opposed by, not by sheriffs, but by police departments. The House voted 60 to 37 to allow people to carry a concealed gun without permissions from the government. That's the Second Amendment. So then they were fought by the Louisville Metro Police Department and the Kentucky State Fraternal Order of Police. We'll be right back.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
What, 100,000? Maybe 200,000? And we've only been engaged in heavy industry for a little over 200 years. 200 years versus 4.5 billion. And we have the conceit to think that somehow we're a threat? That somehow we're going to put in jeopardy this beautiful little blue-green ball that's just a-floating around the sun? The planet has been through a lot worse than us. Been through all kinds of things worse than us. Been through earthquakes, volcanoes, plate tectonics, continental drift, solar flares, sunspots, magnetic storms, the magnetic reversal of the poles, hundreds of thousands of years of bombardment by comets and asteroids and meteors, worldwide floods, tidal waves, worldwide fires, erosion, cosmic rays, recurring ice ages. And we think some plastic bags and some aluminum cans are going to make a difference?
Well, they do here in Austin. They're right there at the very beginning. Plastic bags. Can you imagine if George Carlin was alive today, what he'd have to say about the plastic straw fear, the panic that is being induced by plastic straws and the junk science behind that? You know, President Trump had something to say about all of this at the two-hour CPAC speech. Here's what President Trump had to say about the Green New Deal.
Their plan would remove every gas-powered car from American roads. Oh, that's not so bad. They want you to have one car instead of two. And it should be electric. Okay? So tell people, no more cars. No more cars. I think the auto industry is not going to do too well under this plan. What do you think, Meadows? How's this? Will the auto industry be good? I don't think so. It's not looking good. I think maybe you're going to see some bad stock prices if that passes. It would end air travel. But you'll get on a train. Don't worry about it. You just have to cross off about 95% of the world. And it would force the destruction or renovation of virtually every existing structure in the United States. New York City would have to rip down buildings and rebuild them again. I don't think so. This is the craziest plan. And yet I see senators that are there for 20 years. White hair? See, I don't have white hair.
Okay, so he's taking a hit at Bernie, and we're going to talk about how new poll shows that Americans don't like socialism, and they don't think people over 75 should be running for president. Sorry, Bernie. We'll get into that in a moment. But first, you know, when we look at this, what AOC did, Occasional Cortex did, by unintentionally being honest, she told everybody where this is headed. And President Trump just went down that. Is that any more absurd than what George Carlin said? He said, yeah, we're going to destroy the world with plastic bags. Well, her solution is no cars, not just no plastic bags, no cars, no planes. She says she loves trains. We'll see how that works out here in just a moment. But even the Greenpeace co-founder, who now calls himself a sensible environmentalist, he's split with Greenpeace now. But Greenpeace co-founder, Dr. Patrick Moore, had some things to say about Occasional Cortex. He called her a garden variety hypocrite on climate. Here's an example of it from the New York Post. They had a headline called Eco Trip, very much like Ego Trip, right? Gas guzzling car rides expose AOC's green hypocrisy. Actually, you know, what she's been guzzling are Uber rides. Because she thinks that she's Uber always, right? It's kind of the centrally planned control. But, you know, I mean, Hitler could make the trains run on time. Maybe she doesn't think the subway runs on time. Because as she pushed back against that, she says, oh, well, okay, you accuse me of being a hypocrite because I ride cars. She tweeted out, the Post put in the fact that I get into cars while proposing a plan to invest in better car technology. The government doesn't invest. The government shouldn't be planning our economy. That's the central problem with this, AOC. Government-planned economies always fail. That is the fatal conceit of the Green New Deal. That is the fatal conceit of socialism. But she went on to say, I'm proposing a plan to invest in better car technology. Is it really better? No. On their front page, they put that. So pack it up, folks. A Pulitzer's been decided. No one can rival this kind of hard-hitting journalism. But as the Daily Caller pointed out, if you look past the headline, you actually read the article. They pointed out that since declaring her candidacy in May 2017, Occasional Cortex's campaign has heavily relied on combustible engine cars, even though a subway station. Here's the key point. She loves trains, doesn't she? She loves government transportation. But she's got a subway station just 138 feet from her campaign office. She listed 1,049 rides on Uber, Lyft, and Juno, and other car services, show the federal filings. The campaign had 505 Uber expenses alone. In all, she spent $29,365.70 on those emissions-spewing vehicles, along with car and van rentals, even though her Queens headquarter, the headquarter of the Queen in Queens, was just a one-minute walk to the number 7 train. She can't be bothered to walk 1 minute and get on a train. But for the rest of you plebs out there, you're going to be riding on the trains if you can go where you want to go. Of course, the trains aren't going to get a lot of places that you need to go. And you can sit there and wait on them. Maybe that's why she didn't want to do it. Maybe she thought it was more convenient to call Uber and have them wait on her. It underscores when she spends about $30,000 on Uber rides. Think about that. That was just during her campaign. They all want to tell you that it's going to be so much more efficient if we rent our transportation by the ride from whoever these people are, Uber, Lyft, Tesla, GM, Ford. They all want, they have put in regulations on cars because they don't want competitors. That's really why they call for these regulations. Why? They not only tolerate them, but they call for them. We've seen the same thing happen with a lot of different businesses. Restaurant businesses will come in and say, well, you know, we want you to put, we don't want to have our business taken down by people who are irresponsible. They open up a filthy restaurant. So we want all these regulations that are going to ensure that a new restaurant is going to be above and beyond anything that is currently out there. So they may require them to have all new equipment and so forth instead of being able to buy used equipment from an existing restaurant. They put regulations on existing businesses, and that's one of the reasons why the car companies are so compliant with these corporate average fuel economy standards and with the safety standards, especially the fuel economy standards. That means that the engines have to be very, very complicated. They've got a difficult position right here where they switch over from engines that have these super complicated emissions strategies to something that is incredibly simple, a battery and electric motor. In order to do that properly and to keep competition out, they have to make an alliance with the government. That's where the crony capitalism comes in. That's where the real dirty dealings come in. But they're more than willing to do that, and they keep telling us it's going to be so much more efficient when we own all the cars and you don't have to own a car and you can just rent it by the ride. Look at this. She spent $30,000 on Uber rides. Do you think you would spend that much on a car, even in New York City? I seriously doubt that. I know for a fact that you can get reasonable transportation and spend way less than you're going to spend with Uber or Lyft or Juno, even if they are self-driving. It's going to be far less money for you to do that. But that's the hypocrisy of this woman who thinks that you should not have a private car, but she should be able to travel like a queen. And she will. Because she will be planning the economy. That is the scariest part of this all. Not just the banning of all this stuff, but the fact that she would sit there and say, shut up, I'm in charge. Because that's exactly what's going on. It always looks like that. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. As we hear Alexandria, Occasional Cortex, I think we ought to start calling her Alexandria in Wonderland. But of course, there in Queens, even though she was only a 1 minute walk from the subway station, she spent $30,000 on Uber rides and Lyft rides and so forth. Those infernal internal combustion engines. Those things that she doesn't want us to have, but she says, oh, it's okay, you all have trains, except she doesn't want to ride the trains. And as we look at the hypocrisy of this, just keep in mind that she unwittingly told us where they're going and told us the time frame is, if a lot of people didn't understand, that it was going to be in 12 years. The UN told us a long time ago, you know, it was Agenda 21, and then it became the UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainability. As I've said, many times the elite are very successful in what they do. You don't become successful by setting a goal and not putting a time on it. And they have put that time on it. 2030 is when they want to have us locked into their smart cities, their green cities, their sustainable cities. And you'll be in your micro apartments and you will not have any transportation. Of course, they'll have With 5G, the ability to watch you and everything that you do, they'll have the same kind of power over you that the Chinese have for currently are exercising over their citizens. And with their digital surveillance. And, of course, the first thing that the Chinese do with their digital surveillance is, drumroll, limit the movement of people that they don't like. Limit their employment options. Limit how and where they can live. All those different things. This is what's being rolled out. It's being rolled out 2030. And quite frankly, as amazing as the candor of what AOC had to say, it's a lot more frightening than what she talked about. It's not just taking away your meat, your private transportation, and so forth. That's all these different aspects. Now, we've been told, and remember it was under the Obama administration, we had the Department of Defense saying, we have to understand that global warming is a greater threat than ISIS. It wasn't that long ago. And they were still singing that tune when President Trump took office. The Pentagon. Again, global warming is a greater threat, according to the Pentagon, than ISIS. Now, the Marine Corps, and this is on the Drudge Report, the MarineCorpsTimes.com, is saying that they're stepping up winter warfare training as the global threat shifts. I've seen this shift multiple times in my lifetime. The first Earth Day back in 1970, and for several Earth Days, we were told that we were going into a new ice age. And then all of a sudden, it just rapidly shifted. We had, if you will, a shifting of poles. We got the polar opposite. You know, I'm talking about how the North Pole is migrating. Well, you know, we have migrating justifications for government control. It doesn't matter if it's cooling or if it is warming. It is a global catastrophe that must be solved by government. Government at the global level. Always. And so now, they're shifting it over to winter warfare training. Step that up. Why are they doing that? Well, because you've probably seen the article over the weekend, February to Remember in L.A., it's never reached 70 degrees. So, yeah, it is getting cooler. And we've had a lot of scientists who have been telling us that. They were telling us that the weather, as George Carlin so humorously put it, is dependent on solar activity and all of these other things that are so much bigger than us and our plastic bags and plastic straws and your private car. The weather is determined by solar activity. I've talked to Professor Willie Soon, others we've had on the program many times, talking about how we're going into a solar minimum. As solar activity decreases, as the heat decreases from the sun, you're going to have cooling on the earth. And these things are cyclical. And they happened way before the Industrial Revolution. And they're going to happen again, regardless of whether or not the communists are successful in rolling back every bit of progress that we've had during the Industrial Revolution. They better hope that we have some internal combustion engines to generate some heat, because the cooling is coming. So Tom Luongo writes at Zero Hedge, he said, when bubbles burst, the end of global warming, he says, as the center of the U.S. freezes, this weekend we have Elon Musk trying to figure out how to save Tesla from going the way of Enron. Religions die hard. That's exactly what's happening here, folks. We have the religion of global warming that is now being exposed as a fraud, even to the extent that NPR is kind of, and I've got that next to talk about this. Mark Moreno put up a link to the NPR article where they talk about the White House's new chief climate change skeptic, and they are not that skeptical or critical of him. It's getting to be a pretty absurd position to try to defend global warming. And only the diehard idiots like AOC and Bernie Sanders will continue to go there. Even environmentalists are starting to pull back from this. Even the Pentagon, which wants world government, starting to pull back from it. But as he points out, Tom Luongo says, religions die hard. It takes an orgy of evidence to change a person's mind on a subject that is integral to their moral and ethical structure. How did it get that way? Well, of course, it got integral to their moral and ethical structure because it's been hammered into a couple of generations from the time that they were in kindergarten that this is reality. And it's not reality. They have gaslighted these kids, just like they're gaslighting them now about the transgender stuff. But they have convinced these kids that the sky is falling, all these Chicken Little socialists, because they want a centrally planned economy. He goes on to say that in the case of Tesla, the mania surrounding it over the past decade has been bound up in the hysteria of global warming. You're not going to find anybody that is, I think Elon Musk is a true believer in this, or at least he does a very convincing act. He certainly believes in getting billions of dollars in subsidies from the federal government. As this guy talks about it being religion, think about this. You know, the Satan is consumerism. And we know that because we've seen the Pope railing about consumerism more than he rails about Satan. He's got a much bigger problem with consumerism than he does with Satan. He doesn't have any problem at all with pedophiles. But the Pope hates consumerism. It is the great Satan out there. And this environment worship is part of the religion of secular humanism and Marxism. We have a high priest of technocracy who is not the Pope. The high priest of technocracy is Elon Musk. And, of course, he is tied in with government, getting his subsidies for various projects. But that brings us to the NPR article that, again, they were surprisingly reasonable with the treatment of William Happer, the Princeton scientist who's been chosen by President Trump. They talk about how he is a real scientist. He studied at Columbia University. He joined the faculty at Princeton University in 1980. They quote a guy who says he's a damn good scientist. And they talk about why he is skeptical. This is coming from NPR. Folks, you're seeing a radical change. It's not just that they're changing. It's not just that the climate is changing from radical global warming to global cooling. No, it is collapsing. This religion is collapsing. That's a real climate change.
Making sense common again. This is The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, it's kind of interesting to me to see how science is being abused and misused. Shut up, the science is settled, they said. Well, you know, science, real science, is never settled. Real scientists are always skeptical. Real scientists are always challenging assumptions, especially when everybody agrees, especially when there's consensus. No breakthrough in science ever comes without challenging the consensus. And yeah, we got a couple of stories here. As I was saying, you know, we see the narrative of environmentalism collapsing, not only because of the absurd demands of Alexandria and Wonderland, occasional cortex, demanding that we change our lives to suit her. Cory Booker, same thing. Oh, I like being a vegan, says Cory Booker. Well, fine. Eat what you want to eat, Cory. And, you know, if AOC loves to spend $30,000 over the 1 year that she was campaigning, wants to spend $30,000 on Uber and Lyft rides when she lives 1 minute from the subway, well, who am I to argue with her privilege? But they don't want you to have any privilege. They don't want you to have any choice. And they're going to try to hammer you with this idea that the science is settled. So shut up. You don't have anything to say. Well, you challenge them with the science. You can read. You can think. You can still get this information. Especially if we keep InfoWars alive, you'll get this information. I want to go back to what NPR is saying, because I really agree with Mark Morano. ClimateDepot.com. He said, you know, this is key that NPR is treating the guy that's been chosen by the White House as their climate change skeptic. They're treating him with respect. There's a lot of people in the Democrat Party who are throwing shade on AOC because they're very worried that they have gone way too far radical, way too far in terms of being honest, telling people where this is actually headed. Just listen to what they say at NPR. They talk about how this guy's got credentials. He became a physicist. He taught at Columbia. He joined the faculty at Princeton in 1980. They quote a guy, a prominent physicist who's now a professor in New York University. His name is Stephen Koonin, saying that this guy, who is the climate skeptic for President Trump, he says he's a damn good scientist. There are really two significant contributions associated with him. One of them is he made it possible to capture much better images of people's lungs. The other allows astronomers to see the stars more clearly. At the same time, Happer acquired, and this Happer is the guy that has been picked by the White House to be their climate skeptic, and to be, in other words, to be a real climate scientist. A real climate scientist would be skeptical. He would say things like, show me the data, especially when, you know, 10 years ago, we had ClimateGate where they were saying, well, we got to hide the decline. Don't show people this. And then Michael Mann, the guy who was the idiot. Well, he's not an idiot. We're the idiots for the people that believed him. But he's the guy who concocted the hockey stick thing, saying that once CO2 gets up to a certain level, the temperature is going to go up exponentially. And it didn't happen. CO2 rose, and his predictions didn't come true. And he was saying, we got to find a way to hide the decline. And he did. It's called a lawsuit. A group that I was with sued him, said, you were paid to do this research working at the University of Virginia when you were corresponding to these people in East Anglia, the UK, part of climate change. You're being paid by the state. You finished your research. You published your research. So there's nothing that you can claim in terms of intellectual property. You know, that was paid for by the taxpayer. And after you published it, it was used to create public policy. So show us the data now. Finally, can we see the data that you based your conclusion? Oh, no, you can't see that. That's private. That's my private stuff. But you did it on a university computer. You did it during working hours while you're being paid by time. Oh, no, that's private. Absolutely private. Can't touch. See, now they discover privacy. It's like when you get the undercover videos of the abortionists ripping babies apart and offering to sell the parts. It's like, oh, no, you violated their privacy. You want to stop a woman from killing her baby? Oh, you're violating her privacy. But all the rest of the violations of our privacy don't matter. Don't matter at all. But again, going back to this article, they say at the same time, Happer, the White House climate scientist, skeptic, acquired a reputation as a contrarian. He was quick to challenge conclusions that struck him as unproven. That's what a scientist does, especially when it came to environmental science. That reputation was cemented by his confrontation with Gore's staff over risks posed by the ozone hole, which, that's not one of these cases. They never looked at the ozone or tried to measure the ozone. The first time they looked at it, they noticed it was a hole. Therefore, it must be the end of the world, right? They don't know that the hole wasn't always there. They don't know if the hole is growing or shrinking or moving or what. They just, oh, there's a hole. The sky is falling. The ozone is falling, I guess. Koonin thinks that Happer was doing what a scientist should do, demanding better evidence. I'm reading not from Breitbart or InfoWars or a Daily Caller. I'm reading from NPR. This is NPR talking about this. I think that's another sign that these people are on the run. Handwriting is on the wall. Actually, it's not handwriting on the wall. It's the thermometer on the wall that is got these people on the run. Anyway, he says he was doing what a scientist should do, demand better evidence. He said, I think it sensitized him to the squishiness, if you will, of a lot of the environmental science. In other words, squishiness means they don't have the data to back it up. So that's why they all freaked out when Scott Pruitt said, if you're going to publish regulations, you're going to have to show us the science behind those regulations. You have to show us the data. And all these scientists, quote unquote, scientists in the federal government, especially the EPA, screaming, you can't do that. You can't do that. You can't force us to show you the data. Unbelievable. What does peer review even mean if you don't have to show the data? Some of Happer's scientific critics, though, see it as something more, a visceral distrust of scientists who study environmental risks. Well, maybe that's because he's seen them abuse scientific standards for so long. In a speech to a 2015 conference organized by the Heartland Institute, Happer scoffed at these fears. Again, he called them Alice in Wonderland fantasy. I think it's Alexandria in Wonderland. He said, when I got into this area, started to learn about it, I learned that when I looked at CO2, I should assume that it caused harmful warming, extreme weather. Noah's flood, you know. I remember thinking, are they mad? Yes, they are. He says carbon dioxide is actually good for the planet. It's like fertilizer. It makes crops grow more productively. He's absolutely true. And it's absolutely amazing to see NPR putting out a story like that. But then let's flip over to the other side, the other bad science. We had a story that was on the Drudge Report over the weekend from Infowars.com by Don Salazar. Video game will now cast anti-vaxxers as the spreaders of disease. Now, hold that thought for a moment, and let's go back and remind everybody what we've said so many times. If your vaccines work, then you don't have anything to worry about, right? It's a tacit admission. This fear and this panic is a tacit admission that their vaccines don't work. And so this is a game called Plague Incorporated. It's created by a company, and this guy who is the founder of the company, James Vaughn, says he's all about science. He's standing up for science. As a matter of fact, he's been invited to speak, no less, at the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta. No coincidence there, because they happen to be the biggest profit center on the sale of vaccines. They warehouse this stuff. So, of course, that's it. But what they did was he claims that this came from a change.org petition that got 10,000 signatures. That's not that many on a change.org, especially when the people who created the game are begging people for a petition. And that's exactly what he did. He said, so we've got a disease spreading model here where we track how a deadly global disease spreads. Let's throw anti-vaxxers in the mix. Let's make them the cause of it. Well, how do you stop that? They keep telling us you stop it with vaccines. There shouldn't be a problem, right? We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. I got one more thing I want to say about vaccines, and then we're going to talk about what's going on in Syria. It appears that we've had a white phosphorus attack, which is a violation of international treaties in Syria. Now, maybe you don't care. Maybe you think that ISIS deserves whatever they get. I think so, but there has to be certain limits. It's one of the reasons why we have restrictions. You know, we used to have a Christian society, a society not where everybody was perfect little Christians. There never will be a society like that. But we had a society that was informed and was formed on the principles of Christianity. That's why we used to have the requirement that there would be a debate before we went to war. It was based on the rules of just war that were laid out by Augustine. You have to be attacked. You have to be very clear that you're going to limit the destruction. You're going to try to limit it to the combatants. You're going to have an endpoint, a purpose. The purpose of it is to stop the killing. And once you have gotten in the superior position as the defender, then the killing will stop once you corner the guy. So that's why, you know, people can surrender. That's why it's such an atrocity when troops would surrender to the Nazis and they would machine gun them. No, you don't do that according to the rules of a Christian just war. You don't do that to people. You don't kill prisoners who surrender to you. You don't use them in medical experiments. There's certain things that you don't do unless you're the U.S. government post Operation Paperclip, where we brought in the Nazi science and we brought in the Nazi ethics. But we'll get back to the vaccine stuff, and I want to tell you about what's going on with Syria. We've also reached the one-year anniversary of the Skripal poisoning. What have we learned in the last year about that? Another incident that is also tied to Syria. Real quickly, before we get back to the news, just want to tell you that Survival Shield X2 nascent iodine is coming back. The classic formula, backed by popular demand. You can now pre-order that. Get 25% off. You can also save 50% off Alpha Power. Go to InfoWarsStore.com. You'll see these specials there. We have our new InfoWars Life protein bars. And two delicious flavors, vanilla coconut or chocolate peanut butter. They're only 240 calories, but they're packed with 15 grams of natural protein and with lots of fiber. You can save 40% off if you get two boxes or more. And we have Bod Ease. That's our turmeric formula that is combined with other natural, powerful ingredients to help you fight inflammation that can cause joint stiffness, lack of flexibility and so forth, but also inflammation in other parts of your body besides just your joints. Again, Bodies, the turmeric formula with other natural ingredients, is now 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. It's not just a video game that is spreading fear and being rewarded by the CDC. Oh, yeah, come and show us how you did this. Yeah, it's a propaganda operation. We've also got the UN now warning about complacency about measles. Again, articles everywhere going to Madagascar where they have people dying from lack of food, lack of medical treatment, and saying, look, you got some people here that died of measles. It's like they're dying of everything in Madagascar because they basically are living in a society like the one that the Green New Deal will give us. We won't have enough energy. We won't have food. We won't have medical care because we will have a collapsed, impoverished society. So you got people that are dying from the side effects of pneumonia, side effects of diarrhea, dying from starvation, dying from lack of medical care. And when you look at the infant mortality rate there, the child mortality rate, it's 7 times what it is here in the United States. Yet you have USA Today saying, look at this. We had 900 people out of 68,000 die in Madagascar. Will that happen in the United States? That type of fear-mongering is being done for the big pharma vaccine manufacturers, trying to manufacture consent. But they don't really care if they don't get your consent. Because the bottom line, as Jane Orient pointed out last week on WND, here's the headline. Should we sacrifice freedom for vaccine safety? See, that's always a trade-off, isn't it? Freedom for safety. Liberty for safety. Actually, it's liberty for the promise of safety. And, that is against everything the society was built on. It's against the medical community as well. See, the oath of Hippocrates, as she points out, physicians have the duty to advise their patients according to their best ability and their judgment. There's also Galen, whose motto was, first, do no harm. Those are back in the days when we had physicians, doctors. Maybe they weren't as advanced as the doctors today. Maybe they were. Maybe they were more advanced because they had ethics taught to them as part of their education. No longer taught today, as you can see with Ralph Northam, right? Ethics is not part of the curriculum, evidently. And so they don't care about whether or not they harm the patients. They don't care about your consent either. It's not just that they should inform you about all the different options, but then if you make the decision. Isn't it interesting that the Democrats will have the right to die crowd out there saying, well, I have the right to refuse your health care and have the right to die. I even have the right to compel a physician to assist me with that. It's called the right to die. But you'll never see these same people out there saying that you have a right to life. Oh, can't do that. No, they will compel the physician to kill the baby if the mother demands that. That's the way that this rolls. But that ultimately, folks, is the decision. Freedom or safety. Liberty or safety. There is a risk involved with anything that you do in life, especially with medical treatment. Every medical treatment has a risk. The doctor ought to advise you as honestly as they can what the risks are and let you make the decision. But that's not what they want to do in the vaccine crowd. And they want to demonize anybody that doesn't do it their way. And we are filled every day with more panicking. I mean, we just had this come out over the weekend. Travelers at Midway Airport may have been exposed to measles. So what? I was exposed to measles. I caught measles. Everybody in my generation had it. It's not the end of the world. It is not Ebola. These same people who are freaking out about measles. Remember when they didn't freak out about Ebola? You talk about risks. Look at the percentage of people who die from Ebola versus the percentage of people who die from measles. Yeah, you can die from anything. You can die from diarrhea if you're in Madagascar. But look at the percentage of people who die from each of those, and look at the fact that these same people out there who are demanding that you surrender your freedom and your choice and your consent to their mandates are the ones who are telling you, don't worry about Ebola. Don't worry about it. All right, let's switch gears and go to Syria. We've got a clip here. Get that ready. It's video clip number one. Real quickly, I just want you to remember, when we had the false flag that was staged in Douma, That was that was the third year that they had done it. It was like an anniversary thing, doing it every year. That's one of the reasons why I'm going back and covering this again, because I want to make sure that we don't get roped into this war or into another war because of some false flag by the military-industrial complex. But they did it three times in a row. That's why I said last year what they had to do was they had to roll in the Skripal poisoning. And here we are a year later, and there's still no evidence that Novichok was used. As a matter of fact, all the evidence points to the contrary. As George Galloway writes in the UK, he says, one year on from the dastardly fate of Sergei and Yulia Skripal, no one knows what happened to them, how or why, or even where they are today. One year later, we know they're alive. One year later, a nerve agent was allegedly sprayed onto their, after the nerve agent was allegedly sprayed on their front doorknob, their house now is getting a new roof. And why the roof? And why only the roof? None of this stuff makes any sense, folks. It's seven times more dangerous than VX nerve gas. As Putin laughed, he said they'd be dead if it was that. And when it was taken to one of the half dozen organization for the prohibition of chemical weapons, there's only about a half dozen labs that are allowed to do this kind of analysis that they trust. When they took it to the Swiss lab, and I'm going from memory, I think it was BZ was an element there. That was consistent with what the people who attended to them on the bench said. They said, well, it looked like they had opioid symptoms. And there was a doctor who attended to them for a half hour. And then they put on the big show. They had the people come out in hazmat suits. Remember that? But the doctor had already worked on them for a half hour and said they had opioid symptoms. Now, when they sent it to the lab to be tested, they found BZ gas, or BZ, which is a substance used for dry cleaning or something like that. But it can be toxic. And then they made the note, they didn't call them out on it, but you can read between the lines, they said at the Swiss lab, and a pristine, undegraded sample of Novichok. Now, this was months later. It would have degraded. So it was put in at the last minute. And we don't have time to show you the white phosphorus. So stay with us, and tomorrow, if you join us, I will show you the picture of the white phosphorus. I'll give you the tale of the 50 tons of gold that are allegedly taken from Syria in a deal with ISIS. I mean, this thing is so corrupt. And I don't know. Where do we start? I mean, you know, the fact that they built all these military bases and airfields and we can't even protect our border. Thanks for listening.